time to get ugly.
You're listening to Ruskin and Zach.
The artist formerly known as Brett Bielema served the University of Arkansas and the Razorback Foundation with a $7 million lawsuit. Bielema contends that the Razorback Foundation breached contractual obligations to pay him a $12 million buyout. University of Arkansas shortstop Casey Martin selected yesterday by the Phillies with the 87th pick in the third round of the 2020 Major League Baseball draft. He was ranked the 30th overall prospect by MLB.com, 28th overall college prospect by D1 Baseball. He did hit 311, 30 homers, 112 RBIs, 2-plus seasons. Slot value for his pick, 689-300. Three-star quarterback Lucas Coley of San Antonio committed to Sam Pittman yesterday. He's the second quarterback in the 2021 class. He is the 19th overall rated dual threat quarterback.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good. Got some boys who can sling it a little bit. Major League Baseball's owners are expected to send a new proposal to the Players Union on Friday that includes a season lasting between 70 and 75 games. Owners' proposal would include a payment of somewhere between 80 and 85%. Your Ruskin and Zach Twitter polls today. How much money will Brett Bielema get? None. 1 to 5 million, 6 to 10 million, all the money. 44.2% of you say he'll get 1 to 5 million. Who owes Brett Bielema the money? Foundation? Jeff Long? Nobody. He's a bum. 52% of you say he's a bum.
I had to put bum in there because lazy ass wouldn't fit. So I had to put bum in there. Or lazy drunk wouldn't fit either.
You need one Arkansas coach to win one Arkansas high school football game. Who you got? Rick Jones, Barry Lenny Sr., Kevin Kelly, Gus Malzahn. 29.9% of you say Gus Malzahn.
That's the incorrect answer.
Barry Lenny Sr. is the correct answer.
No.
Gus beat Barry Lenny Sr.
Or Rick once. Jones.
Or Rick Jones. No. But I'll still take Barry Lenny Sr. All day, every day.
No. No. Boy, for a state that sure hates Gus Malzahn, why is he winning this poll? What is going on here?
I put that in there as a red herring. Because I knew you guys would vote for him. I love Gus. He's one of my guys. He's a Springdale guy.
A red herring.
You asked, like,
where do you catch those at, Zach? Hey,
Jeeves, how many state titles did Gus win at Springdale? How many? It's an audio medium.
I'll find out.
No. Nope. I'm asking.
Just
how
guess.
Many, just how many do you think he won? He was there 5 years.
One.
He won one in 2005.
That's right.
Everybody's like, oh, he won 16 in 5 years. No, he won one.
16 in 5 years. That's the perception, right?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part about Gus Malzahn's legacy is they named a football field after him at Hughes, and then Hughes went out of business.
They did.
The school's not there anymore.
I've actually been to it. It's the last exit before you get to Memphis.
What kind of honor is that?
Well, it's I'm sure they use it for something, you know, like intramurals or, you know, cow tipping. I don't
tractor pulls. All right. Tim, with an interesting proposal. $7 million would buy 175,000 handles of Tito's.
Mm.
It's like a 2-year supply for Bert. Maybe you could settle for a trailer load of vodka. Well, we'll tell you what. We have a direct line with the foundation. We'll call over there and say, hey, maybe instead of cash, offer him the booze, and he may say yes before you get to the cash offer.
Trade.
Oh yeah.
Get some radio people.
Like Kramer, when Kramer spilled the hot coffee on himself on Seinfeld, and he sued the coffee people because it was too hot. The first thing they offered him is, we'll give you a lifetime supply of coffee. And he went, I'll take it. He never even got to the cash. So maybe this would be a situation like that. Because Bielema and Kramer are kind of the same guy, minus about 300 pounds. But anyway, there you go. The lawsuit puts Arkansas on the map. I hope it works out well for the U of A. Free advertising, go Hogs. Signed, Brett Bielema. That's a text from Jim. And
Jim, be better.
Jim, that's not your best work.
No, definitely not.
Corey Rogers says, the way I see it, Brett Bielema broke the contract first. He didn't win. Yeah, but these contracts are not based on performance.
No.
Then. They are sort of now, but they're not then. See, Arkansas signed this terrible deal, 6 years ago. So you gotta wear it, man. I mean, that's just I don't see any other way around this.
They gave him the contract after the Texas Bowl, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The worst Texas team in God knows how long.
What they failed to account for was Charlie Strong was on the other side.
Yes.
He was terrible at Texas.
Yes. Yes.
You beat Charlie Strong. That's not a reason for a massive extension. And trust me, I'm a guy who knows about terrible football extensions. 10 years.
Yeah, at one point, your school was playing four coaches,
four
right?
Four coaches at one time.
Notre Dame?
Notre Dame was paying four coaches at one time. Trust me, I know about bad contracts. Three of them were not coaching. Three of them were out of the business.
That's right, yeah.
That's how bad they were.
Amy in Hot Springs says, Bielema breaches contractual obligation not to wreck the program. Print the shirts.
Again, that's not part of it.
No.
The buyout.
If nothing else, I am proud that this show, in our 14 months on the air, has totally blown the lid off the worst-kept secret that Bielema was a lazy drunk when he worked here those last few years. I mean, there's just that's what everybody knew, and no one had the nuts to talk about, and now we do. So there you go. I'm proud of that legacy for this year. Now, look, program.
Game recognizes game.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, we can spot it a mile away.
How long, a text from the 479 from H.J. Stepp. How long before the Morris lawsuit? It's spelled loss suite, by the way, but I know what you meant.
To our knowledge, he's still getting paid, right?
I believe so.
Okay.
I mean, the paperwork would be out there, but the... You know, it runs a year behind, so it may not be, he may not be in last year's paperwork with the foundation, so we may have to wait a little while to find out what's going on there.
Hey, we've got some breaking news.
Yeah, what do you got?
So Scott just texted, and he said, the information sign on the interstate says Gus Malzahn once had a football field named after him. It's now a supercenter. Is that true?
What?
Is that true?
They paved Paradise and put up a parking lot?
Oh, boy. Let's get the I-team... here's my favorite. Old school baller just texted, and he's like, Arkansas is going to get another commitment today at 5 o'clock. I said, great. According to who? And he said, the internet.
Oh. All right. Now, according to the internet. So, wait a minute. Now we could have a party here. Tim just brought this up.
Yeah.
We could have a party here, because if you take Bielema's trailer full of vodka and Chad Morris's inevitable trailer full of Red Bull that they're going to give him, I mean, well, we got a party. All right.
Somebody check. Hey, one of you guys check. See who owns Red Bull and if they own a vodka company, and maybe we can get a 2-for-1 deal.
Yes. Yes. Right. It gives you wings.
That's right. You ever? I mean, you don't drink that stuff, do you?
Only with vodka. I don't drink it solo. No.
You'd think, since that's like and by the way, that stuff's terrible for you.
I know.
The Red Bulls.
Yeah.
I had two this morning.
Yeah. And remember 2 years ago when we would glorify the fact that Chad drank like 12 in a day?
Yeah, but they were the sugar-free kind.
Those are still loaded with chemicals,
loaded,
dude.
With saccharin. I mean, it's even worse. But.
All that stuff causes cancer. You know that, right?
Okay, just saying. Allegedly.
I mean, if you believe in science, that's true. If you don't believe in science, then none of this means anything. It's just gobbledygook. So, Baron in Paris says, Bielema should be paying the university for the shoddy, lazy job he did. Tell me he won't win this. He's going to settle and he's going to get some money. This does not need to go to trial.
If Brett Bielema is confident in if he believes that he has his ducks in a row, I say you do it. You go after the full 12. Now you run the risk.
Well,
of zero.
Here's the thing: they've already paid him 4.3.
Okay, so it's 7.7.
Then they stopped.
Right.
And the U of A, you know, wants the 4.3 back.
Right.
And they don't want to pay any more. That's what was in the paper earlier this week. So. Maybe that's their countersuit. Well, if we want our money back. It's a bad deal. It's one of the worst contracts we've ever seen. That doesn't, I mean, I don't know what their legal ground is other than, well, we don't think you look for a job. Well, that's your word against the emails and the calls and all the stuff that they're going to produce on that side.
The foundation just released a statement. You want me to read this?
Yes, please.
Okay. This is from Jordan Black over at 4029. Quoting here, Marshall Nye, who is counsel for the Razorback Foundation, says, we just received a copy of the complaint at 2:50 Central Time from Brett Bielema's counsel. It appears the complaint was provided to the media several hours ago, even before the complaint was accessible on the court's website. What I can share at this point before digesting the entire document is that the foundation previously demanded that Brett Bielema return the $4.55 million that had been paid to him prior to the foundation's discovery of his multiple material breaches of the agreement. It appears that Bielema filed suit in order to avoid being sued.
Oh, so he beat him to the punch here. Yeah.
All right, so that last line is, let me read that again, just because that's new information, new at 6. It appears that Bielema filed suit in order to avoid being sued.
Well, and it also says in there that the foundation has evidence of multiple right. breaches of the contract, okay. Which we have never seen.
So thank you, Jordan.
So we have two pieces of important information that we don't know here, okay? Mm-hmm. Let me break this down for you. Bielema's camp claims that he's tried to get other jobs and hasn't got them. And I'm sure they've got emails and calls and all that stuff. The foundation claims they have evidence that he's just been lazy and not tried to get any of these jobs and work for under market value. So that's, we got to see who's going to tip their hand here. And I would bet you, since the Bielema camp did leak this to the press a couple hours before it was filed officially in court, that they're going to put all of their evidence out. Look at this conversation we had with Michigan State. Look at this color. Look at all this stuff. So,
all right. Who do you think he interviewed with? Michigan State?
Well, last year, I mean,
Michigan State, Colorado, we know.
Barrett Salee reported earlier today. That's why I keep saying that. Barrett Salee reported earlier today that he was in discussion at Colorado and Michigan State in this past offseason.
Okay.
So,
who else? K-State?
Possibly when Snyder, yeah, that could be.
Okay,
but I don't think last off season is the beef.
Is the issue.
I think the Arkansas beef is when he was the, you know, assistant to the traveling secretary for the New England Patriots a couple years ago, because that's not a on the field assistant job when they won the Super Bowl. By the way, if that makes you feel any better. So you got to go back to that time period, I think, is what the rub is here from the foundation side. So anyway,
this is going to get fun. We're here for the whole
just when you thought we didn't have any sports.
Oh boy.
Corey and Roger says the only place he interviewed was Taco Casa, or wouldn't it be Casa Taco?
Oh,
right?
Good Lord.
Come on, man.
Ah.
You think that's like the one guy in a crowd that thinks he has like the real crusher insult for the umpire, and he says it, and everybody looks at him like, oh,
that's too bad. Oh boy. Okay.
Here's a text that says that he applied for those jobs only after the university came for the money. Thought he was being slick and got called on it.
Okay. Well, maybe. It's going to get negotiated down. He'll get something, and away we go.
Here's another 479 text. We get what we deserve. We hired Biff Tannen. I mean, Brett Bielema is coach.
Yeah.
What are you looking at, butthead? Great text. I wish you'd put your name on it. That's a terrific effort out of somebody.
Yeah.
The 479.
Brandon and Paris as part of the settlement will be that Bielema has to go coach in Texas. The state he pushed off the map. Because we're going to run down their throats.
Right, we're going to have 7 tight ends, and you're going to like it. And, you know, whatever. What evidence do you have, sir, that up-tempo football is dangerous? Oh, death certificates. He's probably drunk when he said that, too. You know? I mean, we don't know anything about any of this stuff.
Great.
Could he get a job at Casa Taco?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's qualified.
Oh, no, taste tester. Like quality control.
You need more guac
You a guac guy?
I like guac.
I love guac.
Yeah.
Guac and sour cream.
Does anyone not like guac?
Yes, there are people that do not like guacamole.
These people should be rounded up and put on an island somewhere.
Yep. I'm particular about my guacamole. I don't care for chunky guacamole. I prefer for the guacamole to be smooth.
I'm with him.
But I'm a texture guy.
I'm with him. I'm a texture guy too.
Hold on. Let's just.
I don't know if I can say anything else to that degree.
Let's just halt the proceedings right here. A texture guy.
Yeah.
So I don't know, cottage cheese.
I love cottage cheese. I can't. So texture for me, tomatoes.
I can't do this. We don't talk to people who like cottage cheese. Mm-hmm. Nope.
The mic's a touch hot.
Yeah, a little. You might want to bring that down just a little.
Watch the EQ there. A little bit.
Really.
Yeah.
Cottage cheese is disgusting. Oh, so gross.
I'm not a fan of it, no. But I'm with him though. I like smooth guacamole. I don't like chunky guacamole. Mm.
Amy in Hot Springs says Bielema's baby daddy drama.
Mm. Yeah. Eric in Greenwood says cottage cheese is good.
No, it's not, Eric. No, it's not. It's not. Doug in Mountain Home likes cottage. Here we go. Cottage cheese and peaches.
All right.
What is wrong with
you
people?
And we're back to weird food combinations. And we're back.
What do you eat with cottage cheese? Jeeves, what do you eat?
My grandpa used to eat cottage cheese and peaches. I just eat cottage cheese by itself.
What does it taste like?
What does cottage cheese taste like?
Yes.
It tastes like creamy curds.
Oh.
Have you, our resident dairy man, Greg, says he sells it and can't give it away.
You know why? Because it's disgusting.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have found our next
here we go.
Zach wager, haven't we?
No.
You got to try cottage cheese the next time you lose something.
I will throw up.
We'll tape it in advance. Okay. Then. We won't do it.
Pineapple and cottage cheese. B.E. and Clark. What is wrong? Ketchup and cottage cheese? What the hell is wrong with you people? Oh, my God.
I don't know. I may have some when I get home now.
Ketchup
I'm curious.
And cottage cheese?
I will admit, that's really gross.
Yes.
I'm cottage cheese curious. Well, what about these freaks that mix like ketchup and mayonnaise that dip their fries in?
Well, that's fry sauce.
Nah.
Yes, it is. That's what fry sauce is. It's ketchup and mayonnaise.
Come on.
You sprinkle in some, you know, you throw some Tony Satcheries in there and ooh, that's some good eating. But ketchup and cottage cheese? Gross.
Yeah.
Oh, here's somebody just puts pepper on it. What the hell, man?
I don't like sour cream. I'm not a fan of that. I've tried it multiple times at multiple stages in my life, including a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, this is not for me. Sorry, right. I'm not a fan.
We are making a judgment here. Eric in Greenwood has been removed from the gene pool. He needs to get out of the country. Cottage cheese in your pot pie?
Dude. Isn't there cheese in a pot pie already?
Yes.
Boy.
Don't knock it till you try it. I don't have to. It's disgusting. Scott eats cottage cheese and Doritos. Tomatoes and cottage cheese.
Why is this the thing you're latching on to?
I don't know.
We've spent 20 minutes on an alleged sports show talking about sports, and we start talking about bleeping cottage cheese, and we get 500 text messages. Why do I even try?
I don't know.
Why?
You said it yourself. You've got limited notes over there, and these are the days when things get sideways.
I know. The more I prepare, the worse this show is. That's how this goes.
Right. Cottage cheese on a homegrown tomato. Ah, cottage cheese is reverse vomit. Thank you.
Zach, how do you feel about ricotta cheese?
No.
No?
Not by itself, no.
Oh, ricotta's not bad.
Ricotta in like stuffed shells with marinara.
Right. What about Gruyere? You like Gruyere? Gruyere.
What is that?
You don't have
It's a soft white cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I have it with over here at one of these breakfast joints. They make a Gruyere and a ham omelet, and it's fantastic.
All right. Show of hands here. Yeah. If this wins, we're just turning the mics off. We're going home. Text out of the 479 says cottage cheese and Vienna sausages.
I would eat that.
God.
I'm never eating a Vienna sausage. I'm sorry. I don't eat meat products that live in the middle of the store. If the meat products live on the perimeter of the grocery store, I'm down. But I'm not eating meat products that live in the middle of the store on the shelf for 9 years. I'm sorry. I'm not doing it. And you can call me an elitist all you want. I'm not doing it. I'm not eating meat that's not refrigerated. Oh, so that takes your Spam out of the equation, your Vienna sausages. Now, I'll eat brats because they're on the outside. They're in the freezer section. The refrigerated section.
Oh, so disgusting. Okay.
All right. Well, all right. Another piece of the puzzle falls into place here. Okay.
So gross. Cottage cheese. What is wrong? What else disgusting do you eat? You're a texture guy.
Ooh.
What you got?
Dave texts in, what if they have proof of Bielema drinking on company time? Zach may have proof of him drinking on company time. I was told a story during the break I can't repeat on the air that would indicate that. But, I mean, I don't know that has anything to do with this. I mean, you can use that to establish a track record, but that's in a trial, and this isn't going to a trial, I don't think. No.
Shane and Alma text in, hot sauce and cottage cheese will change your life. No, I pretty much spend my time in the bathroom.
Who's the best TV lawyer? Denny Crane or...
Robert Bernson.
From L.A. Law?
Yeah.
Perry Mason?
No, he was a trial lawyer. Like he was like a personal injury ambulance chaser.
Oh. Well, that's what L.A. Law is, right?
No, they didn't do all murder trials.
I go Jack McCoy on Law & Order, I think.
Jim Carrey and Liar Liar?
No. He's a TV lawyer.
TV.
Ben Matlock. Hello. Thank you very much.
Now, again, he was...
In that blue suit?
Personal injury.
Ben Matlock's the winner.
I don't know. No, there's a
best theme song.
Bum, ba, bum,
absolutely.
We learned the other day that BJ McKay and his best friend Bear was the best theme song.
BJ and the Bear sucks. All right. More to come here on...
More cottage cheese.
That's right. The dairy hour of Ruskin and Zach continues after these brief words.
Live across Arkansas,
this is Ruskin and Zach.
Busy guy with the Major League Baseball draft getting underway again. And we will chat with him now, Andrew Hutchinson from Hogbeat.com, part of Rivals, H-A-W-G, Hogbeat.com, with us on the Williams Tractor Hotline. How's it going, Hutch?
Oh, you know, just got done in, getting set up some new couches we ordered and laid down the six-month-old for a nap, and I'm just trying to relax here for a minute before buckling in for about 6 hours of draft tonight.
What are they paying you over at Rivals? Nikki just got a whole new furniture yeah. thing. You got new furniture. I'm living with a spool and a couple of patio chairs.
The key is marrying someone who makes more money than you. So that is the key.
Hutch has cracked the code.
Yep,
you figured it out. Cracked the code.
You can marry a million faster than you can make it.
How can you be so wise so young, Hutch? And then we have Ty, and then we just can't explain why Ty is the way he is, but whatever, it's fine. All right, so on I want to talk about some your gut thoughts on the some other things with the possible Razorbacks that could get drafted and could go and could stay, because I saw that piece a moment ago. But we'll start with Heston Kjerstad, and you know, I've seen a lot of the comments from him and everything, but from the Baltimore side, what did they fall in love with that they wanted to take him number two overall?
Well, I think they see that he's the best left-handed hitter available, especially from the college ranks. And you know, they're in the middle of a rebuild. They have fallen on hard times. There's a reason they're picking number two overall, and they were picking number one overall last year. So they need pieces to rebuild, and it also made sense just because. You know, Heston's a guy that is probably going to be willing to take maybe a little bit under slot value, which, I mean, that's still going to be a lot of money. I think the slot is like $7.8 million for the number two spot. So even if he takes a little less than that, he's not going to be hurting for money. Whereas the guy that most people projected as the number two overall pick, Austin Martin from Vanderbilt, I had heard rumblings that he had a high asking price, and that's why he slipped to number five. And so it just kind of made sense. Everything came together. I was shocked when he went number two overall. I had had a source that had told me that it was possible, but I kind of just dismissed it like, oh, yeah, okay, I don't think that's going to happen. But sure enough, it happened. I was like, oh, my goodness. They knew what they were talking about. So it was a really cool moment for him and for Arkansas fans to see that last night.
Heston, Dave Van Horn may have tipped his hand a little bit yesterday when he said that Heston may go a little bit higher than people thought. But when you look at the baseball draft versus like the NBA draft, in the NBA draft, you're drafting on potential. The word signability comes into effect or comes into play, especially at the baseball, like you said, with the guy sliding all the way down to five, Heston moving all the way up to that two spot. How much do you think signability played into him going number two to the Orioles?
I think it was a big factor, but again, I mean, you're not going to just draft somebody who's not any good at the number two spot just because you can sign them for really cheap. I mean, they want to get a good player, and Kjerstad, I think everyone agreed, was a top 10 draft pick. I just don't think many people expected him to go that high, and you know, I kind of heard kind of what Van Horn had said and from other people that he may go higher than expected. I mean, I was thinking maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6, you know, compared to where most mocks had him going 7th. But it just kind of made sense for Baltimore, you know, looking, projecting way, way ahead, because obviously there's no telling if he'll make it to the big leagues. I think he will. But, you know, he's got to make it to the minors, get to the big leagues, and then who knows if it's even with Baltimore. He could always get traded between now and whenever he debuts. But I guess Camden Yards is very friendly to the left-handed hitters, and so it makes a lot of sense for him. So I think signability was a big factor, but not necessarily the only factor. He was definitely talented enough to go number 2 overall, in my opinion.
Well, and putting the cart way in front of the horse, you got Camden Yards in that division. Down the right field line at Fenway, it's 302. And then you've got Yankee Stadium, which I think it's 310. Down in the right field. So yeah, you have a few short porches.
The Rogers Center is 6.5 miles.
That's right. Yeah, in the AL East, there are quite a few places where left-handers can get it out with some ease. We're talking with Andrew Hutchinson from Hogbeat. This Razorback baseball program right now has become at that level where it's an organism that's just regenerating itself, where it's just when you lose talent like this, it's not devastating. It's next people in line.
Yeah, the championships aren't there yet, but I mean, it is very much like an Alabama football or a Kentucky basketball, where you get talented players year in and year out, and sometimes you get so many talented players that you're having to ask some of them to move on to other programs or to go to junior college or something like that. So it's quite incredible. It's a well-oiled machine. And you know, it honestly kind of started with that 2017 class that had Heston Kerstad, Casey Martin, Casey Opitz. You know, Jackson Rutledge was in that class. He was only here for a year, went JUCO, and was a first-round pick. You know, some other guys that were in that class. I know Bryce Bonin is a potential guy to watch to get drafted tonight. So there's that draft. And, I mean, since then, it's just kind of gained momentum. And now this 2020 class, I'm sure we're getting ready to talk about, is just absolutely loaded with incredibly talented players, and it's just a matter of how many of them are going to make it to campus. And if the amount make it to campus that I believe will, you could be having a national championship contender in Fayetteville the next few years.
I was looking at one of the best players still available, and their CBS Sports had Casey Martin at number 46 overall, still available. Is he going to get his name called fairly quickly here when the draft starts up in about 30 minutes?
I think he'll be a second round pick. I think he'll be in the first little bit of this draft. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, within the first couple of picks. It wouldn't surprise me if that's the case, but he may slide, you know, into the back half of the second round, or I could even see him sliding into the third round. But he's just so talented, has so many tools, that even with the glaring issues in his game, you know, being able to hit off-speed stuff and the errors in the field, I think there's enough there that teams are going to be like, man, let's get him in our system, see if we can work with him and develop him, because you can't teach the speed, you can't teach the just sheer athleticism. You can maybe teach the mechanics, maybe work on the plate discipline, things like that. And so I think he'll be drafted fairly quickly. I know there's been, you know, people on our message board, people on Twitter, like, oh, I wonder if he'd come back and try to improve his draft stock if he didn't go first round. And I don't think that's the case, because he's still going to get a very hefty signing bonus when he does get drafted.
We're talking with Andrew Hutchinson from Hogbeat.com, part of Rivals, here on Ruskin and Zach. So how does the NCAA has changed how college baseball is going to work next year in terms of roster sizes? How does that impact guys maybe more willing to not go into the into minor league baseball right away and actually come to school, because there's now more flexibility with the roster, right?
Yeah, I think more than anything, it helps Dave Van Horn. He doesn't have quite as many difficult decisions, having to cut people or ask people to move on, things like that. I think just the fact that the draft is shortened to 5 rounds, that's going to push some of the kids that would normally get drafted to college. And so now you got this surplus of talent, and Dave Van Horn is going to be able to have a little bit more flexibility. Instead of having to whittle it down to 35 players, he could maybe carry 40 players. It's just a matter of making the scholarships work. You have more players. You know, you did have only like 27 players that could be on a partial scholarship, and now you have 32. So you have a little bit more flexibility there, and I think that's going to really help Dave Van Horn, and it'll be interesting to see how he works his magic. He does it every year, but this year is going to be probably the most intriguing to watch how the roster develops between now and next February.
And because of those things, because there's only five rounds and the roster can expand a little bit, is it crazy to say this could be, in spite of everything we've seen so far, this 2021 could be the most talented team Dave Van Horn's had on paper?
I think it's totally fair to say that. Obviously, we got to see how these next four rounds go tonight as far as how many players make it to campus. But, I mean, you're already getting guys back that you didn't think you'd have back, as like Matt Goodhart, Zebulon Vermillion, Cole Ramage. I mean, these are guys that normally would probably get drafted. Even guys like Connor Nolan and Caleb Bolden, Jacob Nesbitt, those guys are all draft eligible this year but are not going to get drafted because it's been shortened. So you get those guys back, and then you add this class that Dave Van Horn, I mean, I can remember 2 years ago going to Swatters Club meetings and Dave Van Horn telling the crowd, obviously he can't name names, but he said, now this 2020 class, if we can get them to campus, they are very, very special. And we're starting to kind of see that. And as I said, if they can make it through the draft today, they will be absolutely loaded from a talent standpoint. Now, on the flip side of that is a lot of other teams are going to be loaded from a talent standpoint, especially in the SEC.
So now Kerstad's off to the Bowie Bay Sox. We won't hear from him for probably 24 months until he hits Baltimore. We close the door on his college career. Who you got, Benintendi or Kerstad?
Oh, man, that's really tough. I think as far as just a sheer hitter, I think Heston Kerstad is the best hitter in school history, especially from a power perspective. Maybe
Hold
as
on.
A complete
you said in,
player.
You said in school history.
Yes. I think Heston Kerstad is the best hitter. Obviously, I didn't get to see Kevin McReynolds and Jeff King and those guys play in person, but just what he's done, just the sheer numbers and everything, and consistency from day one. I mean, he hit 330-something as a freshman in the SEC. He would have had a chance to break the all-time home run record in 3 years had the season not been canceled. So I think he's the best. Now, Andrew Benintendi, maybe as a complete player, you know, defensively, speed-wise, things like that, I think he may have a slight edge and you factor in all that, but it's pretty close. I think they're both incredibly talented players. And I think Heston would have had a really good chance to win the Golden Spikes and Dick Houser Trophy this year if the season had not been called off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. About that.
That's, wow.
We're talking about Andrew Hutchinson from Hogby here.
We're talking about a guy that's a world champion, and wow.
Okay. Well, think about the run, though, and Hutch, you were there watching this along with a lot of the fans. As you go from Benintendi basically to Kerstad and Martin era at Arkansas, I mean, what a 5 years that has been, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they've been on an absolute run of fantastic, talented players. I mean, you also throw in, you know, Dominic Fletcher was no scrub either. I mean,
right.
He was second-round pick. So, yeah, they've had a really good run of really, really talented hitters and talented defenders as well.
Mm-mm.
Unreal.
All right. Well, Andrew Hutchinson, hogbeat.com. Keep up with him on all the draft picks connected to Arkansas throughout the evening as the draft continues. Thanks, Hutch. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Andrew Hutchinson, all our guests. Join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach.
Best ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Best ever.
It's one of the best hitter ever. Yeah. And that's a mouthful. You got McReynolds. You got King. Zach Cox swung a nasty bat, too, man, back in that team that went in 09 to Omaha. He got taken by the Cardinals 25th overall in 2010. I mean, this not bad either.
It's okay. Time to get no ugly.
You're listening to Ruskin and Zach.
Ruskin and Zach. 26 minutes till the hour. We'll get back to your lawnmower, and then we've got another another question to the equation.
You are
that
such
we'll get
an
to.
Elitist.
No, come on. We'll get back to all of this coming up here in a moment, but I want to head over to the Jonesboro now and get some context, some reaction from the northeast corner of the state on Arkansas's decision to ease some of the scheduling restrictions they've had with in-state schools. Chris Hutchinson is the sports director at Region 8 News, KAIT, and he joins us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a, I guess, a boring, I'm kidding. I mean, it's been an interesting weekend of headlines on both sides of the national stick, to be sure.
So this announcement doesn't deal with football, but how much of the conversation over in Jonesboro is about football?
I would say, if we do a percentage on this, I would say 60-40. Because in my opinion, it kind of opens the door a little bit. If you're going to play in Arkansas State and all these, you know, all the sports besides football, it kind of already, you know, opens. That's the first step, and you're already kind of looking at the second step, saying, okay, could they play in football in the next 5 to 10 years? Things like that. And I know the thing interesting today, I'm sure you guys have already touched on the headline that, you know, A-State and Arkansas are going to play in baseball next year in 2021, which, you know, it's never happened. And so I think the strong showing of the headlines today is just on the baseball side of things. But I would say easily, the last 48 hours, it was easily 60 to 40, 70 to 30% looking at, okay, more folks kind of talking about this on the football side of things than for non-football sports, which is the whole purpose of the headline to begin with. But it is what it is.
Chris, if I'm Arkansas State, you have... We have gone after this for years and years and years and years. And, yeah, hey, we'll play you anytime, anywhere, anytime. Well, it's time to put your money where your mouth is because they're there. Now, I think we all kind of agree that Arkansas is not going to do a 50-50 split on this. They're the big boy in this relationship. If Arkansas is going to play Arkansas State anywhere, it's going to be over here in Fayetteville. At least the first couple of games are going to happen over this way. At what point does Arkansas State, if these games, if baseball goes off, if they play in basketball or women's basketball or whatever it is, these games go off, does Arkansas State sort of bite the bullet and say, we'll come over there and play you?
I would in this instance, because like all the reasons you touched on in football and financially, it's a whole lot easier to get this, to get the check if you know you're going to go over to Fayetteville. Just like Arkansas, for folks that don't know, Arkansas State plays at least, I call them one paycheck game a year. For example, this year they're going to play Michigan, hopefully as scheduled, and if so, A-State gets $1.8 million out of it. So on that side of things, it's a whole lot easier to bite that bullet financially, knowing if you go over to Fayetteville, odds are easily in your favor. You're going to get a paycheck out of this to begin with. And as we all know, especially when the time we're in, the more paycheck games you have, the better off you're going to be.
Chris Hutchinson from Channel 8 in Jonesboro is with us here on Ruskin and Zach. I think another part of this, too, is economy related in terms of scheduling. I mean, it's going to be in all these sports that maybe don't generate the most money. Now, of course, men's basketball being the exception there, and baseball does okay at Arkansas, but I mean, it's a lot simpler. It's a lot less expensive to have a softball game or even a baseball game, I'd imagine, because you don't have to travel to some far off places and you save on a little bit of money in that regard.
Absolutely, and I would argue, some of your callers may have touched on this, I would say one of the biggest winners with this headline over the last 48 hours is baseball, because as you guys have probably talked about it for years on end, and I've heard from folks on this side of the state, you know, Arkansas would get that RPI hit for playing other teams outside of the state that may not have helped them RPI-wise. Now, being able to put a UCA that has, you know, some history of doing pretty well in baseball and Arkansas State that's been really up and down, but it's a whole lot better RPI wise than the other schools that you're talking about. And then on the financial side of things, it's a whole lot easier for the bottom line if you're going to gas up a bus instead of gassing up a plane. So for baseball and the non, as we always want to call the non-revenue sports, this is a huge deal for Arkansas State to have that, you know, now Arkansas to have that option to play an Arkansas State or a UCA every single year.
Chris, I'm curious what the perception is. Baseball is one thing. That's a top 10 baseball program with Dave Van Horn and his guys. Musselman's got the basketball programming. I'm not sure that Arkansas State wants a piece of either one of those, but football's a different thing. Say they could work out a deal, and let's say in the next couple of years, Arkansas State fans' perception of that game, their feeling going into that game is?
I would say a majority would say it's about time, that it's just been so long since it's actually, we've heard, you know, the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. I think it really started to pick up around here, ironically, around 2011, 2012, when they started making that run of winning, you know, Sun Belt championships, and then you would start hearing more and more, hey, why don't we play Arkansas? And you kind of would hear that on this side of the state. But I would say it's, like you mentioned, football I think is going to be trending up under Pittman. We'll just see how everything fares this year. Men's basketball is going to be a top 25 team. And on the flip side, here in Jonesboro, football is trying to crack into the top 25. It seems like they're a win, like they're a game or two away every single year, and they end up losing games they're not supposed to lose. For example, losing to a one-win South Alabama team really stuck in the craw of a lot of fans over here last year. But on the men's basketball side, it's just been bleak or meh, to say the least. For folks that don't know, for context, A-State has one NCAA tournament appearance ever. That's including men's and women's basketball, and it only happened in 1999. So it's been a lot of bleak years in basketball. There have been some ups, you know, A-State men going on the road to beating Georgetown a couple years ago, but there's been a whole lot more negatives than positives in terms of basketball in the last few years.
We're talking with Chris Hutchinson, the sports director at KAIT, Region 8 News, with us here on Ruskin and Zach. I'm curious about the crossover. I grew up in Searcy, and there were people there that were like, okay, A-State, you know, didn't dislike them, but were Razorback fans. What's the crossover like in Arkansas in terms of people that are just A-State fans no matter what versus people that are A-State fans and also root for the Razorbacks?
It's been really fascinating to see over here the last few years. This is my second stint over at KAIT. The first time I was here was like 2009 to 2014, and I came back in 2018. I've seen a little bit of difference. What I would say in the city of Jonesboro itself, I would argue it's 50-50 split of A-State and Arkansas fans in the city of Jonesboro. Then you go outside of Jonesboro, and it's pretty much like everywhere else in the natural state. It's majority Razorback fans. It's not even close. But in terms of the crossover, it's better than I thought, because you have especially on this side of the state, you've got a whole lot of, I would call, militant Razorback and Red Wolves fans that have been going at each other for years. So you have kind of this casual kind of sweet spot in the middle. You do have some casual fans around here that will root for both. Now, they may go to travel to games in Fayetteville or Little Rock or what have you, but they'll check and see how the Red Wolves are doing. If they win, hey, awesome for all the schools in Arkansas. But here, it's just been interesting the last couple years. You have the casual fan, but it really gets drowned out by everybody else.
Curious. I mean, when the news came down, I think Derek and I looked at each other and went, oh my goodness. What was that initial reaction like when Hunter Yurecek, and it was a weird, the way they did it, it was just sort of a news release, kind of a Friday afternoon, hey, let's see if anybody's actually paying attention kind of thing. And they release it. The news over here, you know, went over and everybody just said, oh my goodness. And we immediately thought football. What was the immediate reaction in Jonesboro to Arkansas opening the door to potentially playing them in all sports?
I think everybody's kind of eyebrows got raised over here once they saw it. It was funny you mentioned that, because I said it on the air here in Jonesboro. I said, this is the anti-Friday news dump.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
the best way to kind of describe right, the yeah. headline, how it came out on Friday, or this past Friday. But here, like, my eyes kind of picked up saying, okay, if you're opening the door to playing A-State in all sports, okay, that means you're kind of entertaining the thought of playing in football sometime down the road. And I think I've read where, I want to say, Arkansas is I call them non-conference down, where they got all their non-conference games scheduled, I think, till 2025, 2026. So we're still a ways from that. But I would say over here, everybody's eyes really lit up saying, okay, this could actually feasibly happen in our lifetimes, that A-State will play Arkansas in football.
Chris Hutchinson from Region 8 News. He's the sports director at KAIT with us here on Ruskin and Zach. Last one for me, knowing Terry Mahajer and knowing the A-State brass, are they willing to concede if this is a two-game series where both games are in Fayetteville instead of a two-for-one or playing in Little, are they willing to concede to get the game to happen where Arkansas wouldn't make the trip to Jonesboro?
I would say so. I would say Mahajer, for folks with the backstory that don't know, Mahajer played at Arkansas State in the early 90s. They weren't very good. So, like, Mahajer's really seen his alma mater grow firsthand. I think he would definitely be willing to kind of bite the bullet in this instance, knowing that it would be historic anyway, the fact that A-State and Arkansas would play. I would see them conceding and say, hey, it's a better chance we're going to get a paycheck out of this, but we have a chance to make history and finally play Arkansas in football. Now, me being just, I wish it could happen. I wish there would be a scenario where Arkansas would come over here to Jonesboro, because for folks that don't know, SEC opponents have played in Jonesboro before. Missouri came over here to play as a part of a home and home several years ago, and then way back when, Eli Manning with Ole Miss came to Jonesboro. It was, I want to say, the 1999-2000 season. So there is a precedent of SEC opponents coming to Jonesboro. It just hasn't happened in a while.
Right, and Miami was supposed to come there, but with the hurricane, that game got canceled a few years ago as well. All right, Chris Hutchison, Region 8 News. He's the sports director at KAIT. Thanks a lot for the insights, Chris. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Good to be on the airwaves in Northwest Arkansas.
All right, thank you, Chris. Chris and all of our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline here on Ruskin and Zach.
Razorback talk show designed for smart fans. This is Ruskin and Zach.
All right, we're back here on Ruskin and Zach. Good to have you with us here. Lynn Scarborough with the Lindy's Sports, Lindy's football magazine available. Previewing the college football season. Looks like we're going to have one. And Lynn Scarborough is with us now here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. Good afternoon, Lynn. How you doing?
Doing good, Zach. Derek, you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, good to talk with you. I don't think I've seen you since maybe at the Reynolds Razorback press box back during the last football season. Of course, at Media Days last summer, saw you there. Hey, are we going to have Media Days?
I don't know. They haven't said yet. I can't imagine that we are.
This feels like one giant Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
That's fun.
One small Zoom meeting is bad enough, much less having a 1,200-member Zoom meeting. I don't know. Of course, I don't know how y'all felt about it when it was in Atlanta last time, but I wasn't too wild about it, and I didn't talk to anybody that was. So, you know, maybe they'll move it somewhere else, or I don't know how to do it. Maybe, do it as a online type deal. I don't know.
Well, It's all about now being convenient for the SEC network. They don't care about any of the writers in the room there. I mean, and haven't for some time, honestly. It's all about having that backdrop for the SEC Now set and all those guys.
No, you're right. And of course, last time it was over in Atlanta, it was at the SEC. College Football Hall of Fame, which was pretty erect during the riot. So I haven't even talked to anybody to know if the facility is fixed back to where we could have it there.
Yeah.
If they wanted to, I still wish they'd move it back to Birmingham. It's more convenient for the conference instead of where the conference is. But anyhow, if they have it, I guess we'll see each other there. And if not, I guess we won't.
I guess so, yeah. Hey, I saw some discussion today on one of the sites or one of the writers talking about Felipe Franks. And we've asked everybody coming through here during the summertime, just what's your opinion on Felipe Franks? Is probably, I mean, unless there's some kind of upset, is going to be the starter game one for Arkansas this year.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great move. And in fact, I'll just be honest with you, I'm excited about y'all's offense this year. Y'all's offense is not going to get the credit that it's due, and I think Felipe Franks could be the missing element. Although I really thought he had a couple of freshman redshirted quarterbacks last year that might have been as good as the guys that y'all were playing, and they didn't play. But, of course, I've covered Felipe Franks and the fact that he's done what he's done at Florida. You know, I mean, his record at Florida was good. I mean, you know, he got hurt. If he hadn't gotten hurt, I think he'd have stayed the starter at Florida and he wouldn't be at Arkansas. But, I mean, I think he's going to be the thing that makes a big difference with y'all. I'm big on Arkansas's offense because, I think Rakeem Boyd is excellent. We've got him second team All-ACC in a year that's got good running backs in the SEC. I really like your wide receivers. I know the wide receiver attention goes to Alabama and goes to LSU and somewhat to Auburn, and it should because all three of those teams have great wide receivers. But hey, you got three guys with I really like Traylon Burks, And the other two guys, you got three really good starters at wide receiver, and none of them are seniors. And then is Hudson Henry, is he Hunter Henry's brother?
He is.
Yep.
Yes, I see. And so there's your great story right there. You bring a guy in from Florida that's had a great experience there. You bring in Hunter Henry's brother, who's Hunter Henry, was All-American tight end. You got three really good wide receivers in Rakeem Boyd. Well, the only thing that you lack out of that I'm not talking about is the offensive line. And I know it wasn't great guns last year, but Sam Pittman was the offensive line coach when I think I covered a game up there when I had to tilt to the left because the Arkansas offensive line made the field goal sideways. And that's not much off the truth. And so Sam Pittman's a guy that everywhere he's gone has had effective offensive lines. And now he may not have the material this year, but let him recruit a little bit. I'm excited about what your offense could be. I'm not a whole lot excited about a defense that in its last five ball games, other than the Missouri game at the end, they gave up 40. I think 45 was the lowest. They gave up over 50 to Auburn, Mississippi State, and LSU. And you could have the best offense in the world, but if you score 50 and the other team scores 51, you lose all your games.
So if I'm
and,
here.
And so that's sort of my initial, just looking at it.
If I'm hearing you correctly, the pieces are there on offense for Arkansas to put points on the board. This was these guys, minus Felipe Franks last year, these guys were here. Kendall Briles makes that big a difference in putting points on the board with that group of talent.
Well, I think so. I do. I think so. I just think it's a different atmosphere there, and I don't mean anything bad toward Chad Morris because I'll be covering Chad Morris this year. Your audience probably knows, no, Derek does. I primarily cover Auburn, and I think Chad Morris is in a good situation being with being the offensive coordinator for Gus. But yeah, I think Kendall Briles is picking up some good people. I just named them. I think Arkansas's skill people are among the best in the SEC. I don't want to get ridiculous about it. You got some other schools that are mighty good. We got, I think, five teams from the SEC picked in like the top 12 or something. And unfortunately for Arkansas, four of those are in the Arkansas's division. But on the offensive side, it's hard to find a team that's got a whole lot better skill people than what Arkansas is going to put on the field. But they, the offense for these other teams goes up against Arkansas's defense. Arkansas's offense has to go up against the defense of Alabama and LSU and Auburn, right, and so on. But with that being said, guys, those teams lost a lot of people. Now, of course, when you have really high recruiting classes, you're going to have good guys come in and take their place. But would you rather have an inexperienced All-American freshman, or would you rather have juniors and seniors that have been around two or three years? And I'd rather have the juniors and seniors. And LSU lost like 14, 15 people got drafted. Alabama had 12 to 14. Auburn lost Derek Brown and Marlon Davidson, two of the best defensive tackles that's ever been on the same team in the SEC ever. And you lost a lot of folks. Now, on the flip side of that, in our magazines, we name the top units. We call them the unit picks. In other words, we'll have the top backfield, the top receivers, and the top offensive line, and then on the defensive side, we'll have the top defensive line, the top linebackers, and the top defensive backs. Well, the top defensive backs this year, according to our experts, is LSU number one, and I think Georgia number two. The top linebackers, this is national now, top linebackers is Auburn number one, and I think LSU may be number two. We have Alabama, the number two defensive line in the country, and it's tough when you're in the Western Division of the SEC and you've got three or four teams ahead of you that are doing nothing, they're not getting bad, then you can really have a lot out there, and you can lose six or seven games when you're in the Western Division of the SEC and still in the big picture have a pretty decent team.
No.
But it's who you play, and then when you got to go to Notre Dame and play Notre Dame, and we've got Notre Dame picked in the top 10 in the country, and Ian Book came back for his senior year just because he thought Notre Dame was going to be good and he wanted to be part of it.
Oh.
Now, we might have them overrated, as folks often overrate Notre Dame, and then they fall on their face and don't make you look good.
You're killing me, Lynn. Right. You're right, Lynn. Lynn. Amen, you're Lynn.
Me. You're killing me.
Well, I mean, we've got, we're right in there with them. We got a history of that. I mean, we probably picked, I'd have to go back and check, but I bet in the last 10 years we picked Notre Dame in the top 20 probably three or four times, they made it. I think they made it once. They had that year when the when the All-American guy had the fictitious girlfriend, and do you remember that one?
Yes.
And they got their brains beat out. And then they had that game when they made the Final Four 3 or 4 years ago, and I think Clemson beat them about 40-0.
Ouch.
I think maybe 30 yeah. something to nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So we've got them picked up there. But with that being said, that's a heck of a place to go. Hey, Arkansas fans listening to us, man, you need to make a trip to go up there. I've been doing this for decades. I've never gotten to cover a game at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And I would love to be able to go to a game at Notre Dame. So even if you think you may lose the game, which that you know, I'd be an idiot to say I think Arkansas is going to go up there and win. But just for the experience, I mean, you ought to go to Notre Dame and see that. But I can see 4 to 6 wins for Arkansas. And I know that's going
to
make me sound like an idiot.
4 to 6.
And we don't have Arkansas picked high, but I could see Arkansas winning that many ball games.
Lynn Scarborough from Lindy Sports is with us here on Ruskin and Zach. A little backstory, Lynn. Zach is a Notre Dame fan, so for you to come in here and talk about Notre Dame being overrated a lot, you are welcome back anytime here on Ruskin and Zach. I'll tell you right
now.
It's
like walking into my living room and punching me in the face. Thanks, Lynn.
It was great.
Well, hey, Zach, I did not know you were the Notre Dame fan. But look, it's like I tell, you know, I'm an Auburn journalism graduate, went to Alabama Law School.
What so, happened?
You know,
how
got,
do you do
I've
that?
I've got an alumni card. But look, in my heart, I'm an Auburn guy. My daddy played football for Shug Jordan at Auburn.
Okay.
And so it comes, you know, honestly. But, you know, and I'm from state of Alabama, so that's my, you know, that's where I'm from. I've lived most of my life here. But, you know, when those teams do bad, I write that they do bad. They don't pay me to pump people up. They pay me to try to tell the truth the best I see it. So, unfortunately, that's the way I saw it with Notre Dame.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of texts right now applauding your punching my fighting Irish in the face. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you.
So, Lynn, you think they could win as many as 6 games this year?
I'm going to tell you that I doubt it, but yes, I think they could. I'll run down it for you.
Okay.
Hold on. Nevada, they could beat Nevada.
Okay.
They go to Mississippi State. They got a new coach. They got the quarterback from Stanford, which is Costello, and he's going to be very familiar with the coach at Washington State. So he knows what you're getting into there. But this is not a powerhouse Mississippi State team. They lost a lot. They weren't that great last year. You play Charleston Southern. I'll be very surprised if they don't win that. And I understand I'm saying that with some of the games that Arkansas lost last year. But I'll be surprised if we get a repeat of that. I certainly think you got a good shot to beat Louisiana Monroe. You get Ole Miss at home. Once again, I know they've got the flashy new coach and all of that. But on paper, at least, Ole Miss and Mississippi State do not tremendously outclass Arkansas. You know, I wish Arkansas, you know, from their standpoint, I wish they played Vanderbilt because I do think they'd beat Vanderbilt. But I've named you 4 or 5 right there. Now, here's the deal. If they could win one of the games I'm going to say here, you've got a killer schedule starting October the 10th. You play Alabama at home, LSU at home, and improve Tennessee at home, and you go on the road to Auburn. And I can't see Arkansas winning any of those 4 ball games.
Mm-hmm.
But if Arkansas could steal one of them, let's say you steal Tennessee at home, then you actually are looking at, if everything fell right, you might qualify for a bowl game with 6 wins. If that could happen, I'm going to tell you, I don't think it will. But if that could happen, that would be what a great start for Sam Pittman. And, of course, I've got a lot of friends in Arkansas. You know, Andy Hodges and I. And by the way, appreciate Andy putting me in touch with y'all for the radio network and to be on with today. But Andy and I talked about it when Sam Pittman came and talked about it. In fact, Andy called me first to talk about Coach Pittman before actually it was even announced. And it's important, and I don't mean this bad toward Brett Bielema. I don't mean it bad toward Chad Morris. But it's important that somebody is where they want to be, whether it's a coach or it's a player. And a lot of times you'll say, oh, well, we only got a 3-star player. We couldn't get that 5-star player. Well, if that 5-star player didn't want to be where you are and you got a 3-star player whose heart is there, then there's not that much difference between it. And so, and Coach Pittman, because I remember when he was y'all's, your line coach, and he was well-liked up there then. And I can tell you, Georgia people are not excited that he's gone. So, you know, if you got a coach that's solid, that's experienced, and he's been there, he's where he wants to be, if you're looking and saying, okay, the thing we need the most is to be helping the line, and you got a guy that can come in and say, look at the lineman I've already put here, give him a couple of years to get recruited and have folks solid and have these sophomores and juniors I was talking about not leave early a couple of years, he can have a pretty powerhouse team out there. But his problem is he's still going to be playing every year, Texas A&M, Alabama, Auburn, and LSU.
Yeah.
And that's assuming that that the Pirate and I don't know what nickname to give the Ole Miss coach, let's say that they come in and do pick things up like they have done at other schools, then Arkansas could be moving in the right direction and still, you know, be behind because they have they play in the toughest division in in college since 2010. Let's say the 10 years that were 2010 to 2019. You had three schools from that division play for the national championship more than once. I mean, Auburn played for two. LSU played for two. Alabama played for, I think, five. One time Alabama played LSU. One time Alabama played Georgia. I mean, so you're talking the conference and even the division they're in. When you're playing in a division where multiple teams have played for the national championship multiple times in the last decade, guys, it's hard to expect somebody to come up and in a short period of time get to the top of that heap. But I do think Sam Pittman's a great choice to do that. And I like, because of what I think I'm right on Arkansas's skill positions on offense, there's, you know, if they can just stay close in the ball game and their defenses aren't giving up 40 and 50 points, keep the offense close and give them a chance to pull it out with a big play or to hang in there with it and win a couple of surprise games, you might go to a bowl game. You know, if somebody was betting, making me bet, I'd bet that Arkansas wins four. But I think qualifying for a bowl is an outside shot.
Outside of the four borders of the state of Arkansas, I mean, there wasn't a lot of noise about the Sam Pittman hire. I think we've sort of witnessed him through, you know, this pandemic and all of this, and seen him sort of make all the right moves. What's the perception? You mentioned that the folks at Georgia weren't happy that he's gone. What's the perception of Sam Pittman outside the state of Arkansas?
I don't think there is one, and I really don't, because I think he got a big advantage on this, because it was so much prominence was given to Ole Miss and Mississippi State. You know, those two hires came within a week of each other, and both coaches, you could call them flamboyant, controversial, whatever you wanted to do, they soaked up all the headlines so that Coach Pittman got to come in. Hey, I liked Coach Pittman's speech. I saw when he left Georgia what he had to say, and then I saw, you know, he really kind of got emotional. He said, or it seemed to me, I wasn't there, y'all probably were. I'll talk to Andy about it later too. And he seemed kind of emotional to me that he's getting to come back to Arkansas, and he kind of got, I don't know if they teared up or whatever about it. But I saw when he left Georgia, he was talking about the offense he'd had there, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm kind of paraphrasing him, but basically he said, I like an offense that's got a tight end and three wide outs and that things are going more toward a run pass option. And if I've got the personnel that could do it, that's a attractive thing. Well, if you've got the run is Felipe Franks and Boyd, and the pass is the three wide receivers you've got and the young Henry, that pretty well covers the run and pass option. Yeah. And if you can just give the quarterback a little time, if your offensive line will do the job. But again, you're going to do it up against Notre Dame and Alabama and Auburn and LSU, and you know you're going up against some of the best teams in the country.
Yeah. Lynn Scarborough, Lindy's Sports, the Lindy's College Football Preview Magazine, available now. Lynn, thanks so much for the time. It's good to catch up. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, let's do it more often.
Yes, sir. All right. Lynn and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline.
Cross him off the guest list.
Ruskin and Zach.
Come into my living room, start bashing my team. Not okay.
he's got a lifetime pass now.
What's he got, a golden ticket?
That's right,
now
he's got,
yeah,
two.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, that's right.
And now what was great is that we were sitting here and we were listening to Lynn talk about, you know, winning four, five, six games. Our Twitter machine lit up with a whole bunch of pathway to six wins. Don't say that. We've retired the pathway to seven wins.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just, I don't know.
He was very popular. People loved him.
I like the November's going to be I just don't think the thing's fully formed with no to do anything in September like beat Mississippi State. In November,
You don't like those second week road games.
No,
do you?
I'm not. It's just it's especially.
You're right about the one last year.
Well, when everything's so new, everything is so new. It's just you're not. You go out there because the game schedule. You're not out there because you're ready. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, by November,
especially this year,
by November, you're a little more ready for the games. So can they knock off a Mizzou? Can they knock off an Ole Miss?
That four game stretch.
That's
Alabama, LSU, Tennessee, Auburn. You just got to survive.
Well, look, yeah, you got to survive that. But the next games after that are going to determine if you're going to buy tickets again. Let's be honest. Let's put our cards on the table here, right?
It can't be 2-10.
No, you can't go to
a ticket. You can't go 2-10.
No. There won't be 31,000 people buying season tickets in 2021 if they go 2-10 again. No. So you got to, you're not going to do that.
He said 4-6. I kind of jumped back.
And went, oh, I fell out of the chair.
I'm like, okay, tell me who.
It's like, that's why I had to ask. I'm like, how did we get to this? Hey, Skitch, how did we get here?
That's
right.
He's not wrong. I mean, the Mississippi, everybody's talked about it all spring. The two Mississippis and Mizzou were games that were, you're not outclassed.
Yeah.
The three non-con games, minus Notre Dame.
No.
I mean, that's six.
So they expanded the league in 12.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do some math here during the break. Arkansas is 13-43 in conference play since they expanded the league.
I don't care what league you play in. That's not good.
That's 30 games below 500. I'll check my math. Well, we know the last guy went 0-16, or the last two guys, if you count Lunny as the interim. So then you figure out the rest. John L. won a conference game.
That's
Fielder lost a bunch early.
That's awful.
All right, we'll come back. We'll do an SEC report. We'll do a bunch of stuff. 866-285-4005 is the number. Ruskin and Zach back in a moment. Don't you go change it, baby.